Tonight I've asked Braden to read a scripture before the lesson. I'm going to start doing this, if not all the time, at least most of the time, and we'll be asking you, Rodney, and others to read some on Sunday nights. I appreciate these young men that are Christians and want to use them in the service as much as we can. And it's important to learn to read from God's Word. It's not as easy as you think to stand up here and read a passage and get all the words right. We have a tendency to overlook a word or add a word, and sometimes doing that can change the meaning. And so I'm thankful that we have those that will participate. And tonight we're going to be thinking about 8 verses of Scripture in the 12th chapter of Romans, verses 9 through 16. And Braden will come and read that passage at this time.
Love must be sincere. Hate what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Honor one another above yourselves. Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor. Serving the Lord. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Share with God's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Mourn with those who mourn. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. Do not be conceited.
Thank you. The microphone needs just a little adjustment between the two of us, doesn't it? There is a sense in which the 12th chapter of Romans is a little book of Proverbs. The book of Proverbs is, as you know, filled with wise suggestions. Many times there is a lesson in each verse in the book of Proverbs. The 12th chapter of Romans is like that. We've just listened to the reading of the middle part of the chapter. There are 8 verses that come before what Braden read, and there are about 5 or 6 verses that come after what he read. But he read from 8 verses. Verses 9 through 16. There are 17 good habits mentioned in those 8 verses. 17 qualities of life that we really need. In fact, if everybody would really do what's in those 8 verses, it'd almost put us preachers out of a job. Because if we did what's in those 8 verses, we would have lives that would be the kind of lives that all of us ought to live. And we wouldn't have to preach very much about things that are wrong. I went back this afternoon particularly and checked 3 versions of the Bible on these 8 verses. And Braden read from a 4th version tonight. We listened to him read from the NIV version. I'm going to share with you what's said in the King James Version, the New King James Version, and the English Standard Version. The English Standard Version is one of the newest versions that's out. It hasn't been out but a few years. And in my opinion, from what I have read so far in it, it's one of the best modern versions of the Bible that's out. It tends to stay close to the original languages as we know them, and yet put it in words that we can understand. Let me list, first of all, the 17 qualities, or you might call them good habits, that are mentioned in these verses. Sincerity, discernment, affection, honor, industry, dedication, service, joy, patience, prayerfulness, generosity, hospitality, goodwill, encouragement, sympathy, harmony, and humility. Had you ever thought about there being that much in those eight verses? You've read this chapter many times, and I've mentioned to you before, it's the first chapter in the Bible that I learned to quote word for word. You can still quote most of it. But in these eight verses, 17 outstanding qualities of life. 17 good habits, if you please. We have a tendency, I think, sometimes to concentrate on bad habits. And we need to deal with bad habits and help us to overcome them. But sometimes we need to talk about the positive side. We need to talk about the good things. Almost every time in the Bible, when you will find a subject being discussed, you'll find balance in that God will give the positive and then he'll give the negative. And in many instances, he'll give the negative first and then he'll give us the positive. For example, Psalms 1 says, "Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night. He shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water." See, he points out the things that we shouldn't do, the bad habits, and then he turns around and shows us what the good habits are. And I could give you passage after passage that will say that. So tonight we're concentrating on good habits. The first one mentioned in verse 9 is sincerity. King James Version says, without dissimulation. The New King James Version says, without hypocrisy. And the standard version that we talked about says genuine. Genuine, English Standard Version. So without hypocrisy, we would understand that better than the King James Version that says without dissimulation. I doubt that any of us, or very many of us, would know what dissimulation means unless we looked it up. But when you mention the word hypocrisy, we know what that means. We know what a hypocrite is. And when we mention the word genuine, which is the opposite of hypocrisy or being a hypocrite, then we're talking about sincerity. You've heard me make the statement more than once that, in my opinion, one of the greatest qualities that anybody can have is the quality of being sincere. Being yourself. Being really sincere in what you do, meaning that your words come from the heart and your actions come from the heart. And so he says, first of all here, we need to be without hypocrisy. We need to have sincerity. In that same verse, he says, we need to abhor that which is evil and cleave to that which is good. The New King James Version says, abhor to that which is evil and cling to that which is good. And the English Standard Version says, abhor that which is evil and hold fast to that which is good. What you see here again is the balance, and it has to do with discerning between good and evil. Remember what the tree was called in the garden that Adam and Eve ate off? The tree of knowledge of good and evil. And you go down through the Bible, and again, here's that contrast. Really, throughout the entire history of man, there are things that are evil and there are things that are good. And the idea here is abhor, that means hate. Hate that which is evil, and cleave to, or cling to, or hold fast to that which is good. Sometimes there are people who will hate the evil but won't do any good. Sometimes there are people who will do a lot of good but they don't really hate the evil. It's a combination of the two that gives us the ability to discern between good and evil. And that's one of the great qualities. If you have the ability to determine when something's good and something else is evil, then you will come more nearly doing the right thing. You may remember that in Hebrews 5, he said, as we grow older, we need to learn to where we, or we need something more than just the milk of the gospel, learn to where we can discern as the strong meats of the gospel, discerning between good and evil. I think most of us, and most of the people that you and I know, really want to do what's right. Now, there are some who are not sincere, as we just discussed, But I think most of the people that I know really want to do what's right. But sometimes we don't know what's right. And we don't make the decision because we haven't learned to hate what is evil and love what is good and hold fast to it and to know the difference in the two. And so he says the ability to discern between good and evil. I've told some of you young people, particularly told Cody the other day when he got his driver's license, one word I want you to think of every time you get in the car, and that's the word think. I told my grandson when he got his driver's license, I want you to get something you can stick up on your windshield up there in the corner where they put the mileage for the next oil change. I want you to write the word think and put it on your windshield. Because I think there's where the problem is with most of our younger people in driving and things like that. They don't stop and think. They don't stop and discern. What's the difference between good and evil? What's the right thing for me to do? What would be the wrong thing for me to do? And so discernment is a quality. Verse 10 says, with kindly affection, kindly affectionate, or brotherly affection. And that's simply the idea of affection or love in that sense. We need affection in our families. We need affection among friends. We need affection in the church. Now, there may be different kinds of affection. There may be different levels of love, as we sometimes say. The affection, for example, that a husband and wife have for each other is certainly a higher degree of affection than you would have for a friend. But we need to have affection. We need to learn to love and to show that affection to others. The fourth one that's in verse 10, or the fourth one in the list, the second one in verse 10, is the idea of honoring other people. He says, in honor preferring one another, in honor giving preference, or trying to outdo one another in showing honor. I like that last rendering of it. Trying to outdo somebody else in showing honor. There is a tendency, I suppose, on the part of all of us, to have a little bit of self-love and self-ego, and we like to be honored. I've always enjoyed getting an award, haven't you? I've always enjoyed people saying positive things about me and to me, and I think you do too. But he says you need to learn to honor other people. If a husband is interested in his wife receiving the honor, and the wife is interested in her husband receiving the honor, and the same idea in any relationship, it's going to improve that relationship. I suppose that several of you get that daily devotion that Jerry Patterson sends out. If you notice the statement that's at the bottom of it, something to this effect, you can accomplish great things if you don't care who gets the honor. Now you think about that. You can accomplish great things if you don't care who gets the honor. And you've heard people, especially preachers, say many times, everything we do, we ought to let Christ have the honor. And there's a lot of truth in that. Sometimes it's hard for those of us that are preachers to want the fellow preacher to get the honor. There's just a little bit of tendency to think there, well, I can do better than he can. They're giving him an award, and I can do better than he can. But he says if we have the right attitude, we're going to prefer other people in honor. I think that was one of the great qualities that my wife had. As I look back now, I see times when she deserved the honor, that she worked it so that I got it. And I hope there were times that I did the same thing. In verse 11, the first quality or the first good habit is industry. One version says not slothful, another one says not lagging, and another one says not slothful in zeal. Not lagging. I like that New King James Version on this one. Industry means pushing ahead, not lagging behind. Having some enthusiasm. A person who's going to be successful in life has to have some enthusiasm. We were talking about players on football teams and other teams before services started tonight. And talking about, Rodney mentioned one young man on his team. He said he's one of the hardest hitters when he makes a tackle. He said, when he makes a tackle, you know you've been tackled. Well, that says something about that player. That says that he's putting himself into it. He's really pushing. He's really giving his best effort. And anything that's worth doing is worth doing right. And anything that's worth doing is worth doing with all our might. The Bible even emphasizes that. And that means that we're not lazy, but that we have some industry. We have some get up and go. The sad thing is, in too many instances, our get up and go's done got up and went. And we don't have the attitude and the ambition that we ought to have in the things that we do. Someone told me one time, said, when you preach, you act as if you believe what you're preaching. I said, if I didn't, I'd get out of the pulpit. I believe in putting our shoulders to the task and being interested in what we're doing. And that's what he's saying here, that we need to have industry. And then perhaps this is a twin point. We need to be dedicated to what we're doing. Not slothful, he says, but then he says fervent in spirit. Fervent is used in all three of these versions. You may remember that he talks about praying for one another over in James 5, and he says the effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. Being fervent, being dedicated to what we're doing, is needed to be successful. Then in verse 12, he says, rejoicing in hope. Hope is something that involves things we've not seen, those things we hope for. Heaven is a place we have not seen. But he says, we rejoice in the hope. We rejoice in those things that we don't have yet. Sometimes that's true in school, and it's true on the job. We may rejoice in the opportunities that we have even though the final grade hasn't come in. Or we may rejoice in the progress that we're making at work even though the final product has not come out. And we can rejoice with the hope that we have in heaven even though we have not seen it. We need to learn to rejoice in hope, but in connection with that, he says next, we need to be patient in tribulation. And it's interested in this one. It's translated exactly the same way in all these three versions. Patient in tribulation. Tribulation is when we're having the difficult times. Hope may be suggesting when we're having the good times. We are to rejoice in hope, rejoicing in those things that look good and look positive. But he says we're to be patient in tribulation. I've been well blessed down through life and have never been sick very much. I've been associated with those who were sick in many ways. My mother-in-law lived with us for 11 years and never walked during that time and was in constant pain with arthritis and some other problems. I saw my wife suffer so much. I saw my dad and mother suffer. I've seen others. And I've seen people who were in constant pain for a period of years and yet were patient in accepting the difficulties of life. And there are other ways in which we may have tribulations in life. He says, patient in tribulation. Patient is one of the hardest qualities for me to develop. And one of the reasons for that is if you go overboard on industry and dedication, what we've just been talking about here, then it's hard to have the patience that you need to have. Sometimes I'm not as patient with others as I need to be. I have difficulty being patient with those that are not on time, especially when they could be on time. We have to work on that, but it's one of the qualities that's needed. And I missed the quality of service there in verse 11. We mentioned industry and dedication, but he also mentions service, service to others. When you get feeling down, do something for someone quickly. You get more joy out of doing something for somebody than you do having somebody do something for you. And I think that's embedded in that principle where Jesus says, more blessed to give than to receive. I think if you'll be honest with yourself and look at your life, you'll find that you get more joy out of doing something for somebody than you do having somebody do something for you. That's service, and that's what it's about. In my thinking, I have boiled the Christian life down to just a nutshell. It means serving people and worshiping God. That's what Christianity is about. Worshiping God and serving people. When we serve people, we're serving God at the same time. But be of service. Be helpful. I try to live my life and would suggest that all of us do with a little question in mind, may I help? When you're dealing with other people, if you will go to people with the attitude, may I help? Is there anything I can do for you? Instead of, will you help me? Now, there may be times when we need others to help us. But if at all possible, let's live with the attitude, may I help? Is there something I can do for you? That's the idea of service. And then he says, continuing instant in prayer. The New King James says, continuing steadfastly in prayer. And the English Standard Version says, constant in prayer. I would guess that most of you could quote that verse in 1 Thessalonians 5, pray without ceasing. Three words. One version just has two words. It says, pray continuously or continually. That means pray to God regularly. In a sense, it means let your mind set be in connection with God and realize that He knows your very thoughts all the time. Prayer is certainly important. And then in verse 13, he says, distributing to the necessity or distributing to the needs. And the English Standard Version says, contributing to the needs of others. This is tied in with the idea of service. But thinking about the needs of others. As we go about life, look at other people and see if you see some things that they need. And if there is a need, see what you can do about it. And sometimes, folks, even though we want to do as much as we can through the church, sometimes there are things that need to be done when we see the need. If there's somebody that needs food in the community, as much as we can, let's do it through the church. Let the church as a whole get the praise and God get the praise for it. But if you see somebody on a Thursday morning that's hungry, don't say to him, the church meets Sunday and I'll see if I can get you something to eat. He can starve to death between Thursday and Sunday. When there is a need, do what you can to help. Now, understand that we have to use good judgment. We were talking earlier about a man that we saw sitting by the side of the interstate today. And almost every time that I come to Jackson, I see somebody somewhere. There's been one particular person that I've been watching for the last 4 or 5 years that sets up many times with a food cart from like you'd have at a grocery store, sets up over there on the corner by Walmart or Sam's. Someone told me the other day they followed him after he'd been sitting there and begging all day, followed him to a new pickup truck. We have to be careful and we have to look at the situation. But when there is a need and you can help somebody, and Jesus said, if it's just a cup of cold water in my name, you'll receive your reward. So there is generosity, being generous to other people. And in that same verse, he mentions hospitality. Given to hospitality in two of these versions, and then one says, seek to show hospitality. I think probably we do not do as well in the area of hospitality as our grandparents, for example, did. Back at that time, they enjoyed being together in homes and inviting people in. We have so many things today that occupy our time that we don't get around to that. But many times we don't show hospitality like we should. We had an elder at Henderson who has in the last several years moved to another state, but he and his wife practiced inviting every new member into their home for a meal. And we had a lot of new members at Henderson from time to time on a regular basis. But someone would come in and become a part of the congregation, and the Rickards would invite them to their house for a meal. I appreciated that. In fact, I appreciated it in two ways, because a lot of times I got invited to the same meal. They'd include the preacher, you know, when they invited the new members, and I like that. Anytime you all want to start that practice, I'll cooperate with you in any way that I can. But hospitality is so important. And I'll tell you something, when you spend time with people, whether it's in the church or any other kind of relationship, when you spend time with people in times like eating meals together and things like that. It's just so helpful in developing the right kind of relationship. Today, I ate lunch with the Bushes, Donald and Becky and Katie. And if any of you will come to Captain D's on Sunday, I'll eat lunch with you. That's usually where I go on Sunday. And in fact, I'm not really set on that. If any of you are going somewhere else, you want me to go with you, just tell me and I'll go with you there too. But we sat there today for, I guess, 30 minutes or so and ate. And I think back to all the different things we talked about. And you get to learn, to know each other in times like that. Show hospitality. And let me say a word to you ladies on this point. You don't have to have every speck of dust up, and you don't have to have pheasant under glass on the table. If you know what that is, I've heard of that. I've never had it. Learn to be yourself and learn to enjoy having people in. Sometimes invite me in, just set out the peanut butter jar, cheese and crackers, or RC Cola or something like that. It doesn't matter to me. You're going to keep on and get the idea that I like to eat, aren't you? I enjoy hospitality. I enjoy showing hospitality, and I enjoy receiving hospitality. I wish I knew how many people, especially students, have stayed in our house in the last 24 years. We had one young lady from Pakistan that spent the summer with us. We had another young lady, I've forgotten which country, another foreign country, that spent 2 or 3 weeks with us. We had a young man that spent about 6 weeks with us one time, maybe 2 months. His family moved here, and we're going to be working with the school, and they could live in the basement of the girls' dorms, but he was too old to live there, so he lived with us. There have been times that we had people stay in our home, and I met them when we got to church on Sunday morning. We came in on Saturday night late. They were already there and going to bed. And we just give someone, we've had, I don't know how many people in our home. I have 2 men that are scheduled to stay with me when the lectureship comes in February. I've made it clear to them that there won't be any food in the house to eat, that they'll have to go somewhere else to eat except maybe breakfast. But I'm looking forward to that. I get to know people by being with them. Hospitality is so important. Then he says in verse 14, bless them which persecute you. And that's said the same way in all three versions. Bless them which persecute you. The idea there is to have goodwill toward people. There are a lot of people that I don't understand. There are a lot of people that I guess I'd have to say I hate what they do. But I'm supposed to have goodwill toward everybody. I'm supposed to wish the best for everybody. When I think about some of these people that are in the news right now that have done some horrible things, or at least accused of doing horrible things toward children, I have a hard time thinking in a positive way toward people like that. And yet every one of those people that's talked about has a soul that's going to spend an eternity somewhere. And maybe our showing goodwill to people who are the worst kind of people may be what will turn them in the right direction. And then in verse 15, he says we need to be encouraging to people in good times, and we need to have sympathy toward those that are having difficult times. Rejoice with those that rejoice, and weep with those that weep. Encourage people when they have good times. If you hear somebody that's a friend that's received an award, do you call them and congratulate them? Use your telephone. Do you send them a card? I know some of you do that. Elizabeth brought a birthday card in today, tonight, for Brother William Butler. Encouraging people. Rejoice with them that rejoice. And as much as we talk about getting older, we need to rejoice at each year that we have, shouldn't we? And we need to rejoice with one another. And folks, we need to weep with those that weep. We need to be concerned about those that have problems. Go by the hospital and check with those that are in the hospital. If you can't go, pick up the phone and call. In fact, sometimes a short telephone call is more appropriate under some instances of sickness than going in person. When there's a death, let the person know. Go by the funeral home. Sometimes you say, well, I don't know what to say. You don't have to say anything. Just go. If you need to say something, it'll come to you when you need to. We need to learn to let people know we care when they're having good times and especially when they're having difficult times. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those that weep. And then he mentions in verse 16, harmony. Be of the same mind one toward another. And one version says, live in harmony. Let brotherly love continue. Behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. You know those verses. We need harmony in the family. We need harmony in the church. We need harmony in the community. And oh, how we need harmony in government today. If there's any place that we don't have any harmony, I believe it's that. We need harmony. We need to be of the same mind. Think about what we could do in America if we could get all our leaders on the same page. Think about what we could do in the church if we could get everybody on the same page. At a time when we're emphasizing to the world the oneness of the church, look at all the division that's within the church. All the problems that happen within the church. Now I'm talking about across the brotherhood. We need to learn to live in harmony. And then it may not be by accident that the last of these 17 is humility. Not wise in your own conceits. Not overly involved with your own opinion. Never be conceited. It's hard not to violate that commandment. Heard someone say about a person the other day, he may be wrong, but never in doubt. Now you have to think about that one for a moment. He always thinks his opinion is right. Even if he's wrong, he's never in doubt about everybody else is wrong. You remember what they said about Gomer Pyle when he was marching with the rest of them? Everybody was out of step but Gomer. And I think sometimes that's the way we are. We think everybody's out of step but us. It's not easy to be humble. As one preacher said, what do you attribute your success? He said two things. Number one, I'm a humble man. And number two, I'm a great speaker. And I suspect that's sort of the way it is with many of us, but with most of us all the time. It's hard to be humble, but we need to have that humility. Any of you ever hear Brother Gus Nichols preach? Brother Gus Nichols was one of my favorite preachers of the generation before me. And I think the greatest quality, or greatest compliment, one of the greatest at least, that I ever heard paid a preacher was paid Brother Nichols. Somebody said he was a great man and didn't know it. Now you think about that. He was a great man and didn't know it. He never looked at himself as being great. And he was one of the greatest preachers that we had. A great man and didn't know it. Now listen to what we've said tonight. Sincerity, discernment, affection, honor, industry, dedication, service, joy, patience, prayer, generosity, hospitality, goodwill, encouragement, sympathy, harmony, and humility in 8 verses. Of Romans 12. I submit to you that in those 8 verses we have the good habits that we need, the qualities of life that we need. And if all of us would practice these 17 things, we'd solve most of the problems in our lives and be very helpful to other people. And really it all boils down to this. It boils down to being a Christian. That's what it's about. That's what we've described tonight, isn't it? A Christian attitude, a Christian life. Just be a Christian. If you're not a Christian tonight and you need to be baptized into Christ, if you are a Christian and you need to ask for forgiveness publicly, come as together we stand and sing.